CliffCentral.com.
Look at that. We all survived the weekend. Aren't we clever? Give yourself a round of applause. You made it to Monday. How clever you are. How fantastic, how evolved a creature you are that you can make it through the weekend. Unlike your ancestors who probably did risky and stupid things, took on adventures that were too big for them, drank stuff and ate stuff they weren't supposed to and died. Just think about how many humans had to sacrifice for you to make it through the weekend. Ah, yes. Oh, yeah. All right, well, here we are. It's Monday. It's the 11th of October. How's it going, Leanne Moll? How's it going, Bulelo Tinta? How's it going, everybody?
All good. I was just thinking of what my ancestors might have got themselves into trouble with. Probably like a bar fight at a brothel in a saloon that ended in like a standoff the next day.
Definitely.
In the town.
Yeah. And then one of them was shot in the head.
That sounds like four ways.
One of them was shot in the head. But luckily, you see, the point is if they were your ancestors, that means that they managed to have sex with someone before they died. And that person...
Well, they were at a brothel.
Yes, exactly. They successfully produced another ancestor of yours, just one line down. And even if they died in a horrific way, they left their own genes to continue the story. That's how we got here. Mm. It's not always, you know, they always go, well, you're the descendant of the winners. Not true. They just had
cowards. Cowards.
Well,
we're the descendant of cowards.
Sometimes the cowards, but sometimes also the smart ones. I mean, that's what evolution teaches us, right? Is the ones who survived and actually made more of themselves. But what they leave out is that you might have only survived a few days after making the next version, making the beta or the delta or the gamma or whatever version it was. So you might have, as Leanne says, gone to the brothel the night before, found some fecund hooker and impregnated her, and she managed that night not to wipe you out. And then that great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother like crawled out of the womb a couple of months later, and she's like, who's my daddy? Oh, well, your daddy died in a bar fight, actually. Not a great story, but you're here. That's all that matters. So, you know, sometimes you're the descendant of cowards. Sometimes you're the descendant of winners and brave people. But sometimes you're also just lucky, pure lucky. And lucky is what got us here, many situations.
Yeah.
Because humans are not always the smartest. I mean, you know, we can look back on history and we can take huge pride in all the great decisions that were made. But we always avoid responsibility for the terrible decisions that were made. We're going to get on a ship and we're going to go that way. And we'll just carry on until we run out of sea. Oh, my God. We'll never see those people again.
And food.
Bye. Bye, guys. Yeah. We'll see you later. Scurvy take thee. You know, let's see what happens. Or one tribe decides.
Huge risks.
You know what? This tribe next door, I've had just about enough of them. Let's all gather our sticks with the sharp points, and let's go and kill those motherfuckers. And then they'd go to that tribe, and that tribe was much bigger than they thought. And they were wiped out. And we've never heard of that sharp stick tribe that was so brave and thought they could take on the other tribe, because the other tribe were waiting for them with rocks in a ravine.
And they ate them.
And they ate them afterwards. This is history. And those are the stories. No one wrote that shit down because they were like, oh, it's kind of embarrassing. Let's just leave that story out. But that's how we survived. We ate them.
Yeah.
You're the descendant of those ones. Those are the people who made you. Anyway, so Bulelo made it back from the Tsitsikamma Forest, and he was talking to lots of running people over the weekend, and he says that it was loads of fun. And he can't wait for the next one. Is that about right?
Did you win?
I didn't. I did win because I didn't run. So there's no losing.
I saw a lot of people.
I was just working there.
Funny, I saw so many people. When you, in the background, you had that, what would you call it? Like the gate that everyone ran through.
The arch.
The arch.
Finish arch, yeah.
So I saw, I knew a whole lot of people on Instagram who were there. And they were running through that arch. There were two girls I know who did it. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, maybe those are the people. I mean, they all came to me and they said, if Gareth started a cult, we would certainly be in, and
yeah, but they're already
drink the Kool-Aid, and we'd eat the other tribe.
They're already in the cult. I mean, they're running. That's a cult. It's a big cult.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Especially the trail running one. It is full on cult.
But movement. That's a cool thing. Like after a weekend, you see where most of us would just go, oh, well, I saw some of my friends. I had a good time. If you can get back after a weekend and go, oh, no, I ran this trail run, which is fucking hard, and I did it, and I did okay. Like, that's an achievement. What did I do this weekend?
Hugely.
Partied a bit, saw some friends, saw some family, ate some good food. But that's not an adventure. that's kind of, you know.
Well, actually, in these times, that's a pretty freaking big adventure.
You reckon? We've become that boring.
Really getting out there.
We've become that boring that counts as an adventure now. It's a bit sad.
Only for now. Things will get better.
I hope so. Well, I'm off to.
No, your friends can be proud of themselves. I mean, it's probably the hardest race, a 42-kilometer race, or official race in Africa.
42
and one of the hardest in the world. One of the hardest in the world, and that's like scientifically proven. You know?
I've never run more than 3 or 4 kilometers in a stretch in my life, ever. I don't intend
to. Well, since we're going down this route and you've spoken about this again before, I will remind you of the 10K race that I ran.
Yes, I'm very impressed.
Thanks, bye.
Well done, well done. I mean, that's a big deal. At least you can say that's in your book, but it's not a 42-kilometer trail run across arduous territory.
No.
So there are a couple of things I wanted to bring up this morning. First one is I'm actually going down to Knysna. I'm doing something with Tourvest today and tomorrow. So I won't be on the show tomorrow morning. And luckily you're in the capable hands of Bulelo and Lebang tomorrow. And I should be back by tomorrow afternoon and then back on the show on Wednesday morning. But I'm looking forward to actually seeing that part of the world. I probably haven't been down there. It's ironic that Bulelo's just come back and now I'm going down. We're basically crossing paths on the show today.
Ships in the night.
Yeah, or in the morning, as the case may be. But I haven't been to that part of the world for ages, and I'm actually really kind of excited about it. Going to George Airport, which is something I haven't done since I was DJing all those years ago, because I'd land at George if I had something on in Knysna, sometimes even in Plett, and on the very rare occasion that I found myself in Mossel Bay, which I think was once. I've only been there once in my life, and it was at night, and I can't tell you a damn thing about Mossel Bay. But but it was cool because I love that little airport, and it's a part of the country that unless you go there and, you know, that's your express purpose to go there, it's never really on the way to anywhere. I mean, there are those mad people who take like a road trip all the way from Cape Town to Durban or vice versa. But otherwise, you have to go to the garden route with the garden route in mind, right? Mm. You know, you don't go to PE and decide, I feel like driving all the way to Mossel Bay. And you similarly don't go to George to go to PE. It's a very rare state of affairs. But I'm happy to be going down there again. I mean, Knysna is really pretty. It's a totally different world to anywhere else. And the people who live there are very happy. I mean, they don't want to go anywhere else. And it's got all that beauty of that lagoon and the Knysna Heads and the forests and all of that
forest
stuff. Oh, man. It's great. I think it also has, in South Africa, it's got some kind of a legend attached to it, thanks to that excellent Afrikaans writer, De Leon Mateer, who wrote those Kringa en 'n Bos and all of those stories, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
it's also got the most crystal healing approach.
You're going to be. Yeah, there's a lot of
that. You're going to offend everybody because you can't come in the forest and speak to Mother Nature through the feet with shoes on. Wow, that vibe is prodigious down there.
Yeah,
and they are doing it.
Yeah, yes.
Full on, like those wavy pants with those patterns.
Right.
And it's an honor to have you guys here. Like Mother Earth appreciates and sees you. Like that vibe.
If I had to go barefoot in a forest, the only crystal I'd demand is one that protects my tootsies from spiders and scorpions.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. That's that. But you don't know crystals going to help you in that respect because the insects don't care. They don't have a spiritual dimension. So I'm doing that. And then on Friday, I'll also not be on the show. So I'm afraid I'm skiving off a little bit this week. Because I've decided on Friday I'm going to take a little long weekend and go and enjoy
lovely
the coast of KwaZulu-Natal. Well, those parts of it that are not toxic, you know, since the riots and looting in that chemical factory. And I'll go and chill for a little bit and have a nice weekend. So I'm going to start enjoying this level one shit, whether people like it or not. And I'm not going to stop anytime soon. Anyway.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's my plan. So I thought I'd just let you in on that. So don't expect me here tomorrow or Friday because you're going to be disappointed. So let's just talk quickly about a couple of things. First of all, Bulelo is back, but he did speak to two people who he says are highly accomplished, and they've confessed to suffering from something which you could only describe as a midlife crisis. And I assume they're what, in their 40s? What is a midlife these days?
Early both. Both 50s.
Both 50s. Okay, 50s, so yeah. I was going to say, like, the midlife crisis, they used to say it was in your 40s, but I think it's shifted up. I think it's somewhere in your 50s now, because people's lives have got longer, we live healthier. More or less, we're in a position to call the middle of our lives somewhere in our 50s, which obviously, you know, up to now wasn't possible. You retired at 60, so the middle of your life was kind of 40s.
I mean, it might have also counterintuitive to that. It might have been brought earlier because COVID changed many of our working lives, and all of a sudden we were looking for new jobs. So you could be in your late 30s where you change your career completely and your whole life trajectory.
There are these people who want to stop working, you know, the especially millennials and Gen Z types who say to me, oh no, I want to retire in my 40s. And I'm like, why? What are you going to do? What are you going to do if you retire in your 40s? If you don't have a purpose, if you don't have something to wake up for every day, whether that's work as a job or it's something that you just absolutely love doing. And don't tell me travel is a job or it's something you absolutely love doing, because you can't just be moving around. That isn't an existence, moving around and looking at shit. That's not life. And people who tell me, oh, you know, there are a lot of South Africans. I don't know what this is. I think it's maybe an insecurity complex about being South African. There are lots of people I've met in the last 3 to 5 years who've said to me, oh, my dream is to go overseas. And I said to them, to do what? Like, what do you do on a daily basis? So imagine if you've got millions of dollars in the bank. Money's not an issue. And basically you spend your whole life just following the sun. So you go to all these exotic places that you've always dreamt of going, you know, beaches in Thailand and Mexico and the snow on the Alps and the French Riviera and Canada. You know, you go all these places that people say, oh, these are the places you've got to go to. China, you know, and visit Japan. And so after you've done that for a while, aren't you going to be sick of planes and trains and cars and hotels? Aren't you going to eventually want to build something for yourself? And I don't mean that you need to be stuck in a job all your life. Don't get me wrong. I understand how boring that could sound. But you just traveling is not, that's not a thing to do. I know retired people who are bored shitless, even though they're traveling the whole time. What are you going to do? What's your actual purpose?
It's an interesting one, because after this particular guy came to me, and the other woman, I mean, she brought CBS to South Africa. We're talking about somebody extremely accomplished. She was the best in the world at what she did for a long, long time. And certainly the best Africa's ever produced in our space. And this guy was in sport at the top of the game for 10 years, the greatest South African to do what his discipline was. But it was really interesting to me because it struck me, you know, I write everything I do every day down when I get home. And for me, it's a performance thing. But it was really interesting for me to think how differently I think and the next generation's thinking is. As you were saying now, it was so interesting. Something I wrote down was, we used to define by what somebody is by the work they do. And younger people talk about the experiences that they have, you know.
Right.
And interesting being down in the region, and you're off to Knysna, is how many of my friends from this industry that I work in and, you know, I love, is how many have moved away from Cape Town and Johannesburg. And all of them, I mean, I met 4 this weekend that made the move in lockdown. All of them had the same answer. And I asked them independently, and I didn't even know that they'd moved. Why did you move to Knysna? Why did you move to George? And they said, no, it's about my lifestyle. Mm. And, you know, what you said is interesting to me is, again, for me, it's it's the experiences that people want to have now rather than I want to have a career for 60 years. It used to matter that you worked at the company and got the gold watch after 25 years. And I think both of these people are realizing it's not enough. And I think the toil thing is you must always, because I believe there is salvation in suffering.
Sure.
But it's not enough to have the money. Money is not enough. And you know, something a friend of mine said to me 2 years ago, as she was getting divorced, said something brutal to me, but it was an awesome reminder of what life is, just for me at least. And it came up again this weekend as I was going through my pages, is that when she got divorced, I said, you guys had everything. What happened? You loved him. He loved you. And she stopped me. She said, love is not enough. And I was just thinking of these two people, is money is not enough. They had it all. They were the best in the world. Money, family, and it still wasn't enough. And I'm wondering if it's inevitable. It's coming for all of us.
So are you talking now about a midlife crisis or a general purpose in life and looking for something more meaningful? Because I don't think the two go together. I mean, I think a lot of midlife crisis stuff is people who are suddenly taking stock of their lives and they go, oh, God, I've done nothing. I've achieved very little. I feel like a failure. I feel like a loser. I don't have enough to satisfy me. Like if I were hit by a bus tomorrow, no one would even remember that I was here. That kind of shit.
Well, both of these two are the best Africa has ever produced in what they've done. These two individuals I'm talking about have, and the money is not the problem on either side. Okay. So that's not it. Family, great. Kids, great.
All right. These are not normal, ordinary, run-of-the-mill people. Don't say losers.
1%ers.
Okay. All right. Okay. So midlife crisis. Let's just recap. So what we've determined is, first of all, that it's shifted a little bit later. That now having a midlife crisis is something that probably happens to you in your 50s rather than your 40s. And it involves more or less the same things that a lot of much younger people are going through, as in, what is the reason that I'm here? And what am I here to do? And what gives me a feeling of accomplishment or happiness or peace or whatever it is? And those questions are tough to answer, man. I don't know a lot of people who've discovered the answer to those questions. And again, as Bolelo points out, they could be, you know, seriously successful, accomplished people. They could also be people who have not yet discovered a single thing that gives them any feeling of that. They could be someone who's done nothing. They've lived in their parents' basement the whole time. Now they're going to go out in the world and find it. I don't know.
It's weird. If I think about it, when you mentioned what your life purpose is, I remember buying a book. I was still living at home. I must have been like 20 maximum. And the book I bought was something to the effect of what is the purpose of my life or my life's purpose or something.
Yeah.
And that's the last time I really thought about it, because then you get sucked into the rat race. And then you're just going, and then you're not asking questions. You're just doing, and you're earning the money, and you're earning money so that you can pay people to look after your house while you work, and you're earning money to pay for the petrol so that you can drive to work, and it just becomes this.
Well, that's it. I mean,
this cycle, and you stop questioning things like that.
Well, a lot of people are stuck in survival mode, right? So there may be people listening to us right now who go, "What the hell are these three talking about?" Because these are all totally pointless things to think about if you're actually worried about putting food on the table today, or you're worried about paying your expenses just to make it through the week. For many people, that is the reality. It's like, you know, just surviving. In fact, for the vast majority of humanity, and certainly for the majority of our history, that has been exactly the story. So all of these higher level self-actualization discussions don't even enter into the fray for many people, because they're just trying to make it work for today. And if you have these problems we're discussing, how lucky you are, right? I mean, like if your biggest issue is trying to solve for meaning and purpose, wow, the other equations have been such a breeze for you. I mean, just pat yourself.
It's still a problem, though.
It's still a problem. It's a huge problem. And many people will be driven to suicide by not being able to answer this question. I get it. But man, are you a lucky person if you can say, I'm still looking for my purpose and my meaning? Most people are toiling in the mines, dude. They're trying to just get through, you know, the basic stuff. It's just every day. Drag, dig, fix, make. Just get through the day. Just make it to supper time and you can take a breather, you know, relax for 5 minutes. Shit, how lucky you are to have this. And to think about like travel and, you know, what you're going to do with your life. Please. If those are your problems, you don't really have problems. You don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but listen, it's, and I know that is the way we're leaning, but it's still a problem just because you're born where you're born and you can't solve the world's problems. You know, it's like people always say I'm insensitive for saying that is like my life is the most important thing to me. I'm not Mahatma Gandhi. I can't help the guy in Gambia who that's his reality.
No.
I acknowledge it. It's real. It's awful, but my life's the biggest problem to me. And my biggest problems are, oh my God, I don't want to be 50. I don't want to be going into my 50s going, oh shit, what a waste.
So this is only occurring to you now because you spoke to these two people over the weekend. You haven't been waking up for the last couple of weeks feeling this, oh my God, is my midlife crisis going to get me whether I like it or not?
No, I've been thinking about it for the last 10 years because philosophy, this is the backbone of philosophy. So it's why actually physical activity to me is such an important thing, because from a philosophical point of view is that's literally me shedding the skin off my body. And a lot of the people that I've encountered that have midlife crises is, and these two people, I propose this to them and we'll have another conversation down the road with them, is that because they defined themselves so much by what they did, it became who they are. And I never want to be entirely what I do for a living as a person. You know, if you narrow in on being a world-class TV person as this other person was and world-class sportsman as this other person was, and you just become that, if that is your only identity, what happens when you're not world-class anymore? And I propose to both of them that's why they're having this, because they're no longer the guy and the girl.
Yeah, but,
and it's how they've identified.
But at the same time, like, what do you want from everybody? Like, no one's going to be – everybody's always looking for the next big thing, right? So if you've managed to tick off one of those two things you just mentioned now, if you've got an achievement like that in your life, number one in Africa in whatever, or number one in your industry, or you've changed the world in your business – or you've raised three amazing kids or one amazing kid or whatever it is. Like, that's enough. Stop. What are you punishing yourself for? Like, you know, some people don't even get to that. Number one, there's only one of them.
Yeah.
Like, well, you want to be number one.
It doesn't
one.
Have to look.
You want to be number one in three on different paper. Things? Yeah, exactly.
You know, you may have lived an ordinary life on paper, but my word, have you made a difference in so many people's lives? Maybe you've saved people from the brink of killing themselves.
Yes.
You know, maybe you've even done these things without realizing it. It doesn't have to look good on paper, peeps. You
agreed.
Know?
But you see, Mbulelo's like that. You're the kind of person who, once you've done something, you want to move on to the next thing and do that and try and conquer that one. I'm kind of the same.
And also, I want to be a world-class son. I want to be a world-class brother. I don't want to just be like world-class at what I do for a living, you know? And it's tough. It's tough to – it's impossible to be world-class at all of those things.
You
and,
could be, but
– I think that's where the crisis comes.
Imagine – and this is very petty, but imagine someone's listening to you now who's just really battling to make it through the day.
Mm.
And you're setting the standards right up there. And they're thinking, well, I'm an absolute asshole. No one's ever going to respect me, and I'm worth nothing. So actually, you haven't done good for the day.
Yeah. No. And also, I hear you, Leanne, but it's like their journey is not my journey. I'm not a person where I'm going to take their pain on and make myself feel worse. Like, that's fine, but I have to live in my world.
This is important.
Like, I'm not saying their life.
You are not responsible for other people's feelings.
It is not my job to make anybody else happy. I'm sorry. I've never lived like that, and I can't see myself moving off that hill. It doesn't make me more cruel or more empathetic than anybody else. It's you know, I have principles, and I live by those principles. And forget about what you think about me. What do you think of my principles and how I behave? And you'll be fine. You know, like, Leanne, I hear
all
you.
All of this brings me to the point where I'm like, well, I'm kind of over this media thing. Like, whatever I do next is not going to be in the media. I've been thinking about this for a long time. This has been about 5 years coming.
Your whole adult life has been dedicated
to
media, whether you intended it to or not.
Yeah.
In some form, it's in the media.
And I don't know that the media has made me happy. It's been an interesting career, and I've met so many amazing people. And if I look at the positives, they far outweigh the negatives, right? But the next thing I do, whatever that is, and it'll be somewhere in the next 2 years or whatever, it'll be very different to this. Very different.
Yeah, it's almost I almost envy people who have a craft, for instance, that, and that's all they do. You know, being in the media, no matter what medium you're using, you have to know a little bit about everything. And that's where I kind of envy these top-notch surgeons,
specialists,
or
these
pottery enthusiasts, or people who've made a living on, and a life out of doing pottery, where it's just the one thing, you know, that feels like that might be in my next life, is just being an author, or just doing something like that. Because at the moment we have to be everything, you know?
Well, yeah. I'm not turned on by the idea of having to get ratings and having to be popular and having, you know, having responsibility for what you say and do in the way that you do if you're in the media. I mean, I've enjoyed it. Yeah, I've written two books, started this business, done the number one TV show in South Africa, had the number one radio show in South Africa. I'm happy with all of that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not coming on here to boast about this now, but what Mbulelo said earlier has just made me think.
Yes.
Like, I'm happy with my achievements. And I have nothing, there's no one in the industry that I need to beat anymore. There's no one who I consider my, you know, great rival. There's no one who I think of and go, ooh, I still haven't got to that person's level in South Africa or in Africa. So I'm happy with that. But now it's time for something new, and I want it to be completely different. In this lifetime, I'm not prepared to just have done the things that I've done, happy as I am with them. It's now time for the next one. And I don't know what that
clean
is.
Bowling, you can clean bowling balls. Maybe that's it.
That's it. I mean, maybe it's that simple.
Know.
Maybe I become a really good player of boule. You know, that French game. Maybe that's my, because you could play that until you're 80 or 90 years old. Maybe that's what I'm going to do. Become the world fucking champion of boule. What do you think? Hey? Travel the world to French-speaking countries and play boule. You'll never hear from me again. Whatever happened to that guy? He used to have a show. He used to, you know, he used to talk shit every morning. What happened to him? Oh, no.
It would be the funniest Wikipedia page.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
It'd be like, awesome, you know, the part where it gets to where they are now?
Yeah.
It would just be one line.
Cliff seems to have disappeared. Like, Cliff seems to have disappeared into northern South America, and he plays boule on the beach. That's all he does. Sometimes you'll spot him in, like, the Grenadines or Martinique, you know.
Some have called him the Leo Messi of the boule world.
Yes.
He changed the ball.
He now wears very, very baggy shorts and loose tops
nothing at all when he's in his cabin.
And a monocle. And he plays boo. That's what I'll do. That's my thing. But, you know, in some way, that could be a whole different success. And people might go, oh, well, that's interesting. At least he didn't carry on doing the same thing over and over again. Anyway.
Sure.
All right. Enough of that. See what you've done, Mbulelo. Now you've made us think about our futures, which is terrifying.
Oh, boy.
So we've got Cliff Central Sport today returning with a vengeance. And Mbulelo is going to be talking to Spike Ballantyne, our own Spike, about the Formula One. At 1 o'clock this afternoon. What else have you got?
We've got Brad Phillips on today. We always like to get the week off, you know. He's a physiologist, and we talk about things you can do, very practical, practical options.
Practical.
Practicable. Yeah. We also make up words, which is what we do. Yeah, no, we make up words. He gives us options of what you can do in your real life to, you know, action some change, you know. It's summer now, but also for life change for the rest of your life, in a very positive sense. So he's an awesome guy, and he's my personal trainer. So he's somebody I highly recommend.
Yeah.
And trainer's disrespectful, by the way. He's a real scientist. So it's going to be awesome. Having said that, by the way, I do need to tell you another story that came out on the weekend.
What's that?
Incredible, incredible news.
Yeah.
I think I told you on Friday, but more was revealed about the Great and Witch.
Oh,
one of my colleagues
lives in,
that she actually, when she does call the meetings, like once a month, they have to go to the forest. She goes into the
forest.
She
calls
like,
a meeting.
And she has the walk. Yeah. No, okay. Once a month. She calls a meeting. And like it is weird because, she, you know, it's like in the forest kind of vibes. Are you kidding me? And I thought, this is amazing. And it's totally normal down there. Like, when this person says there's a witch there, I look.
So what does the witch do? She calls exactly. she calls them into the forest, and then all of them just go, like, you know.
No, weekly. There's a monthly meeting. She has a monthly meeting, and she invites everybody. Yeah, and I thought to myself, but nobody else in Tsitsikamma said anything when this person said, there's a witch where I live. I was like, oh my God, what are you talking about? What do you mean there's a witch? It's like, yeah, no, there's a witch where I live. And Leanne,
but Mbulelo, I'm surprised that you are so intrigued by having a witch. Or you
I'm also
so unusual.
I'm sorry, I'm also intrigued. We don't get a lot of witches.
What about, I mean, African tribal living is based so much on witcheries. I mean,
I dismiss all of it, Leanne.
Witchcraft.
I find it ridiculous.
Sangomas.
Yeah. No, I find it all ridiculous. My family hates me for it, and I judge it heavily. I find it completely ridiculous. And hell, and my the vendor side of my family and Betty side up north, where the real juju happens in South Africa, they resent me the most, because as soon as it comes up, I laugh harder. I take the piss fully, and they hate it. So I find all of it ridiculous.
A witch.
That's my witch laugh.
No, I love a witch. I think a witch is a great thing for every village to have. You got to have one. And to have meetings in the forest. I mean, this is just great. I hope she wears a pointy hat as well. I really do. I'm all for the stereotype
I think she's more into tie-dye and macrame.
Yeah, probably. All right.
Yeah, tie-dye's a huge one.
So a few headlines before we get to Dr. Hanan, who I know you're excited to have join us in a moment or two. China and Taiwan. Poor Taiwan. You know, China just coming for them from all directions. But they say they will not bow to pressure from China, and they will defend their democratic way of life. The president, Tsai Ing, said when he gave a defiant speech amid heightened tensions over the island. Apparently, Xi Jinping has vowed to fulfill reunification, whether they like it or not. And sorry, it's a Miss Tsai. She's the prime minister, or the president, rather. It's not a he. Taiwan considers itself a sovereign state, while China views it as a breakaway province. Beijing has not ruled out the possibility of using force to achieve unification. So there's no option on their side as far as China's concerned. Oh, you like the idea of independence? Oh, well, that's very nice. We're just going to reunify even if we need to use force. It's like when someone says to you, you know, I know you don't really love that girl or that guy, but you're going to be forced to marry them, whether you like it or not. That's how it's going to work. Arranged marriage, okay? Cool. Good. And if you don't like it, we will just force you at gunpoint to like it. It's very nice for Taiwan. I'm sure they're thrilled. Okay, so that's what's happening in Taiwan. Not surprising, necessarily, but we'll see what goes on. I like the fact that the Taiwanese are being defiant and saying, we're not just going to do what we're told here, and we're not scared of you, China. Long may it last. Apparently, there's a 5 million rand breakfast probe, which is being called a political stunt. So in Zululand District Municipality, there's a mayor called Thulasizwe Buthelezi, who said there's an investigation by Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs into allegations that he spent 5 million rand on a business breakfast. On a business breakfast that was a political stunt.
Listen, the price of food has gone up, hey? Eggs, yogurt, muesli.
Yeah.
It's expensive these days.
So this mayor, Thulasizwe Buthelezi, says he spoke to the Daily News on Thursday after presenting the paper with proof of the cost of the business breakfast at a hotel in his municipality held last week. After presenting the hotel invoice, the mayor challenged those who claimed he'd spent 5 million to produce their invoices, adding that people who tarnished his party's reputation, he's with the IFP, by the way, had no justification. The municipality hosted a business breakfast at the Elangeni Hotel in Durban, and during the event, a group protested outside the hotel. They were shouting the mayor's name, asking him to come down and speak to them. They held placards reading, "We have no water in Nongoma. We have eggs and bacon in Zululand." Well, this sounds to me
powerful.
Yeah, this sounds to me like the typical stuff you see just before an election. And the IFP are obviously, being rubbished by the other parties in that area. And there's huge contestation between the IFP and the ANC. leading the protest. Of course, the ANC youth leader in Zululand, who's Lindo Kuhle-Qulu, who claimed that the money spent on the event was estimated to be 5 million. Now, show your invoices, like the mayor says. And I'm not just going at this Lindo Kuhle because they're with the ANC. If you're going to say someone spent 5 million, show us the invoice. Then I'll believe you. And then we can go after that person. But if you say, we estimate the cost to have been X, Y, and Z, it's easy to find this stuff. You can find out from the Elangeni Hotel. They will tell you how much was spent on a breakfast. 5 million rand on a breakfast. You know, what is it? Unicorn bacon? Like, what is this?
Salt Bay's preparing that.
What eggs. Is that? I mean, what are these eggs laid?
Truffle and...
Are these eggs laid by a phoenix that you can have bacon and eggs with? What is going on here? 5 million rand for a breakfast. Unless he invited everyone in his municipality, there's no way that breakfast would cost 5 million rand. No way. So I just don't believe you.
Unless there's a certificate proving that the bacon was made by the pig that survived from who had the ship? Noah, Moses.
Noah.
Yeah. It was one of those two. It's a direct descendant.
But aren't they all?
And I don't know. Oh, that's a good point.
If it's true, they all are. Sorry, that's not a thing.
This is a good point.
All the pigs
I think it
are.
Was unicorn bacon and phoenix eggs, like Must Gareth says.
That's the only way it could have been, right? So. I don't buy it. And in any case, this Tulasizwe Buthelezi says, here are my invoices. I could prove to you this is how much I spent. Where's yours? Some bullshit. That's what that is. All right. The police ministry has stood firm on a claim that the Western Cape has the most resources. So this is interesting. Becky Tele says he's sticking to his statement that the Western Cape is the most resourced province. Provincial government hit back at utterances made by Becky Tele at Nimbizo and Mitchell's Plain in Cape Town on Friday. Western Cape Premier Alan Windey urged Tele to retract his statement, saying it was an insult to the Cape Flats' poorest communities that continue to grapple with gang violence and other crimes. Tele told the Mitchell's Plain residents that 24% of police officers trained countrywide had been deployed to the Western Cape. He added an additional 200 officials and 58 vehicles were transferred from other provinces to help quell crime. Well, this is all great. I don't care whether Alan Windey or Becky Taylor win this argument, but Cape Town still has a major problem. Because if we've got close to a quarter of the police in the country deployed in the Western Cape, and they still can't get it under control, that should be an embarrassment to them. That shouldn't be a reason that they're busy one-upping each other. If you guys have deployed a quarter of your policemen in the Western Cape and you still can't get crime under control, then your policemen don't know what they're doing. So stop boasting about what you shouldn't be boasting about. The result is still shit.
So what's Beggy's point there? That he's given resources to Cape Town or that Cape Town has more resources?
You see, anytime Cape Town comes up better than anywhere else in the country and you're in the ANC, you have to say, oh, well, it's because Cape Town is run badly and we help Cape Town every way we can, because then it makes you sound like, you know, it's the DA's fault. That's essentially what they're trying to do here. None of us are buying this nonsense, because the Western Cape still has more gangsterism than any other part of the country. That's their biggest problem. And your police can't seem to get control of this, Becky Tele. That's on you.
Why is he telling us this? We've already given you the money by paying our taxes.
Correct.
Is actually what you're telling us is you failed to distribute the resources correctly to train more police officers. That's all I'm hearing. Is that what he's telling me?
But this is a guy who
That's what I'm hearing.
This is a guy who wears a fedora and tells us that we better be in bed by 9 o'clock during curfew or he's going to come and arrest us. You know how frightened I am of you and your police ministry. Go to hell, man. Who do you think you are? You're like a trumped up demi gangster with way less competence than any mafia boss. Don't give me like Becky Taylor. You couldn't organize a piss up in a brewery. You really couldn't. And the police are a disaster because of you, chiefly. Mr. Shoot to Kill. Remember that nonsense? Shoot to kill. Tell your police officers to do that. You realize that you work for the citizens of this country. Who do you think you are? And so much Mr. Big Talk, and we still can't get crime under control. I fart in your general direction. You, please, Becky Taylor is just a big loser. He's play-acting at being a big, tough gangster. He's play-acting. Look at me. I'm Becky Taylor. I'm a big guy. Look at me. There are probably 5-6 taxi bosses in this country. You could take him on and win every time. 600 taxi buses. You could take him on and win. Anyway, let's move on. We don't have all the time in the world to talk about Becky Cele, and we've got more important and more interesting things to discuss. Now, it is time for It's Going to Be Okay with Dr. Hanan Bushkin. He's a renowned psychologist. He's also the head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic in Johannesburg and a regular here on cliffcentral.com. We've been speaking for a couple of weeks about people who have issues and want to have them resolved, whether it's a conflict, whether it's a dispute, whether it's something that you're trying to work through with somebody. And we want you to come on here and feel that it is a place where you can be taken seriously, and we will be where we will be able to address, hopefully, some of the big underlying issues that maybe are an example to the rest of us who are also going through these things. So this morning, we've got our own Barrett from Cliff Central, and he's going to be joining us. Let me welcome Dr. Hanan first. Hey, Dr. Hanan, how are you?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
So we've been talking about getting people on with some real issues, and Barrett, who works with us, he put his hand up and said, listen, I'm prepared to talk about something that's affected me for a very long time. And this is kind of a heavy story, so I'm going to let Barrett tell it. But it's a story which I think many South Africans will be able to resonate with. There's abuse. There's difficult stuff that happened in his childhood. And he's brave enough to bring it up and to address it with you this morning. So I'm going to let him explain it to you. And hey, Barrett.
Morning. How are you guys doing?
Good, good, good. All right. So Barrett, you're at our offices at the moment. So you're ready this morning to address something with Dr. Hanan. I'm going to let you tell your story, and then maybe he can use this story to help other people who are trying to work through a similar situation to make some sense of it. So you go ahead and tell your story.
Perfect. Thanks. Thank you for having me this morning. Morning, Dr. Hanan.
Good morning, Barrett.
So I was sexually abused from the age of 8. I didn't realize I was abused because my definition of abuse was that I needed to be fearful of the situation and scared and frightened. And the person who did it to me made it into a fun, light thing. There wasn't intercourse, but it was inappropriate touching. And I realized at the age of 25 that I was abused. It hit me like a ton of bricks at that age. I also realized a few years ago that I had programming in my brain that in every situation in my life, that there needed to be some form of abuse linked to that situation in order for that situation to be real. So it manifested into a whole bunch of different experiences in my life. Coming to that realization, I let go of a lot of stuff, but there's still a couple of things that I've realized that I need assistance with regarding this. So the one thing that I realized is that, you know, I'm very hard on myself when I make a mistake or perceived mistake at work or in a situation. I put very hard on myself, to the extent of like, I'm going to be fired. You know, like I'm very abusive to myself in my thoughts and my thinking. So I just wanted to put that out there and ask for assistance with that.
So firstly, let me say the fact that you're speaking about it is incredibly brave. Most survivors of any form of abuse don't speak out because it's so severely and negatively stigmatized, because society perceives that as weak and sees the ones that have been stigmatized as though there's something wrong with them. So the fact that you are talking about it is incredibly brave, and I promise you that a lot of people that don't have the bravery that you do are listening to this and are getting some form of strength, bravery, insight, and are able to relate to this and are learning from your story. So first of all, really, really, really well done. People think the definition of abuse is when it actually hurts. And it doesn't have to hurt for it to be abuse. The moment somebody oversteps your boundaries without your permission, that is abusive. And that can be in subtle and in not so subtle ways. Obviously, at 8 years old, you expect your parents to protect you. You expect the world to be safe. And when you later on you look at it and you go, the world was not safe, and the people that should have protected me did not protect me. Suddenly, what ends up happening is that you enter into a fight or flight world. The brain is designed to do one thing. The subconscious mind is designed to do one thing, and that is to protect you. And the moment you go through an experience where your survival is at stake, suddenly you realize that you're not safe. Suddenly, what ends up happening, Barrett, is that you end up being on guard all the time. So it's kind of interesting what happens. You know, the moment I have a negative life experience, what my brain does automatically, it generalizes the experience. So, for example, if I get bitten by a Rottweiler, my brain will suddenly start not fearing just that Rottweiler. It will start fearing all Rottweilers. Now, the worse the experience, the more my brain will generalize it. So, for example, if a Rottweiler barks at me, I'll fear that Rottweiler. If a Rottweiler bites me, which is a worse experience, I'll fear all Rottweilers. If a Rottweiler sends me into hospital, I'm going to fear all dogs, maybe even all animals. The worse the experience, the more my brain will start to generalize the lesson of that experience. So when we go through something like physical or sexual abuse, which is probably the worst kind of trauma, the brain doesn't go, well, I'm not good enough for just that person. The brain goes, I'm not good enough for anyone. It generalizes that lesson. And what usually happens with people that have been through abuse, they carry the view of themselves and the world that they are just not welcomed. They're not good enough to anybody. And they wonder why. And the reason why is because the psychology of the brain is to generalize. Now, the way we deal with it, and what I'd like to suggest to you, is, you know, I put up a post on Instagram this weekend, which garnered a lot of attention. And what I said is that in order to deal with trauma, you don't have to go to the past. What you have to do is just create different experience and unlearn what the past has taught you today. So what I mean by that, Barrett, is that obviously at 8 years old, you went through this experience which taught you something about yourself. You carrying this lens with you today. If you want to be different, you don't have to go and unpack what has happened to you in the past. All you have to do is unlearn it today. So let's just say your view of the world is, well, I'm not good enough. Let's just say. And by the way, of course, I am just giving an example because we haven't gone through, you know, your history and what is what you've gone through prior or even post this experience. But let's just assume your view of the world is I'm not good enough. My question to you is, what are you doing? And you don't have to answer. It's a rhetorical question. My question to you is, what are you doing today that proves that right? I want you to answer that to yourself. What are you doing today that proves to yourself that you are not good enough? What are you doing today that undervalues yourself? What are you doing today that where you are molding yourself to other people's needs at your own expense? What are you doing today that allows people to continue overstepping your boundaries without your permission? What are you doing today that instead of saying, no, you cannot do that, you'd rather keep quiet and avoid the conflict? So once you write down a list of those things, what I'm going to ask you to do is slowly start to do the opposite. I want you to act and behave on a daily basis as though you are enough. Now, let me tell you what will happen when you do that. When you act as though you are enough, your brain will go, it's not going to like it because it's not used to it. It's unfamiliar. It's alien to you. You've never done it. It's like me. Are you right or left-handed, by the way?
Right-handed.
So if I made you right with your left hand, how does it feel?
Weird.
Weird. So when I ask you to do the opposite and start acting as though you're enough, it's going to feel like you're writing with your, never mind your left hand, but your left toe. That's how it's going to feel. But just like writing with your left hand over and over and over again, suddenly your brain begins to adjust. And it suddenly feels that to be the normal. So my advice to you is make a list. And by the way, of course, I need to put that in the fine print. I would love you to do it with a professional that will guide you on how to do it. But if you're going to do it, You write on a list of all your things that you do on a daily basis that proves the eight-year-old you, right? And I want you to start doing the opposite and proving the you, the eight-year-old you, wrong. So start setting boundaries. Stop molding yourself to other people's needs. Start saying, no, I can't lend you that book and I can't see you on the weekend and I can't have you over. Start acting as though you're enough, and it will feel weird and weird and weird and weird and weird until your brain finds a way to adjust, and then it feels absolutely normal.
Wow. How's that, how
just,
does that sound?
I'd just like to say, it wasn't my parents. We had nothing to do with my parents.
Though, no, so. No, for sure. And by the way, I didn't assume it was your parents. What I'm saying, when at 8 years old, you go through such an extreme experience, you as an eight-year-old expect your parents to protect you. You expect your guardians to protect you. And the fact that, I don't know what happened, but the fact that the world wasn't protective, that is a traumatic experience for sure.
Okay. Wow. Now, Barrett, thanks for sharing your story, man. I mean, this is it's not easy to do this publicly, but the more people do, the more it becomes something which other people can access. And Dr. Hanan, that sounds like such a practical way of going about things, is write down these things and then prove yourself wrong. You know,
that's it. Yes, that's it. It's just beautiful. Absolutely. Yeah, because now you're in control. Suddenly you're not longer a slave to the experience or to the person that did that to you. Now suddenly you're in control. You're in the driver's seat of proving that eight-year-old wrong.
And there's a lot of evidence that this neuroplasticity, this ability for the brain to rewire itself and to change the way that it works, the stuff is actually observable on a scientific level. The nerve cells actually form new connections in new places, and you start different pathways in your head. And this is how you correct behavior which is not optimal and which is frankly holding a lot of people back and making a lot of people feel worse than they have to feel.
Absolutely. You know, neuroplasticity is like the craze word, and the truth is there has to be a balance. But when your brain adjusts to a terrible world and your brain isn't placid enough to actually adjust to a better world, that's when it becomes incredibly traumatic. You've got to immerse yourself in the new experience. So the more you immerse yourself in the new experience, your neurons, you can actually see it visually, actually adjust and find new ways of interacting with the new world. But you've got to immerse yourself in the new world for sure.
All right. Well, I'm pleased that we got you on this morning, Barrett. And you're an example of somebody who's willing to come and share your story so that we can give you practical tips with Dr. Hanan so that you can start making adjustments. And if you have a similar situation, a similar story, email us, contact@cliffcentral.com. And don't be afraid. I mean, no one's going to bring you on here and make fun of you or make, you know, less of your situation than should be given to it as a serious personal experience, and we want to hear from you, and we want you to feel like this is a place where you can tell those stories. So Dr. Hanan, thank you very much. Barrett, thanks very much for joining us, and we will hopefully start to see the practical examples start to manifest in your life, and who knows, there may be someone else listening right now who's gone through exactly the same thing that you're helping.
Absolutely.
Very good. Thanks, Barrett.
All right.
Thanks, Dr. Hanan. Good to see you.
Thanks, guys.
Nice. Very good. It's tough stuff, huh? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Harrowing.
Yeah. But, harrowing. You know, like I was saying earlier, and I alluded to making a difference in people's lives, even if it's not your thing, you're still doing it. And just by telling stories, it just makes so many people feel so much better. And I like the way the world has shifted in that the focus doesn't lie on the person who's telling the story anymore. You know, the focus lies on how many lives that story can change.
Right. And that's happening every day. That's what we're trying to achieve anyway. So Blind History Season 6 is about to start, and we would love your input on who to include. You know, we've done close on 70 episodes of Blind History already. So there are a lot of people that we've already covered. And if you haven't heard the show, go and listen to it immediately because you're missing out. But we'd like you to help us suggest, who do you want, Leanne? Who do you want, Bulelo?
Have you done one on my ancestor who was killed shortly after his brothel interaction in the saloon?
No, not yet, but we'll start looking at that.
That's my suggestion.
I just don't, we don't even know his name. We're not even sure which brothel he was in. It's very difficult for us to track him down. It'll be a very short episode.
I understand.
I feel like we've kind of covered it this morning.
I understand.
Bulelo?
I want Lisilo. if you don't know who that
is. Lisilo. That was the evil
Gareth,
spirit.
Why do you know that? Do you know who Lisilo is?
Because I used to watch this stuff when I was a kid. Yes.
We were fed on TV.
I used to watch the Setswana version of Lisilo. On, I think it was SABC or could even have been BOP TV at the time.
TV. It was just like TV.
TV 3 or TV 1 or whatever it was. But yeah, I used to watch that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lisilo. And then Lisilo would appear. Oh my God, it was frightening. That was like probably from some of the first horror that I ever saw.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to say right now is my safe space has just been super messed up by your response because like I always think of myself as this perfect non-racist person, but my racism's came out there. It's like, how the hell did Leanne and Gareth know this?
White people
know the only black people could watch it. So,
sorry about that.
I'm so sorry for being racist there. Something I try not to.
Remember, back in those days, we all received the same three TV channels.
Yeah.
If you were lucky.
That old government, they couldn't keep us apart when it came to Lesseed. It was at that point we knew that apartheid had to fail because they couldn't even keep it together for the TV shows. It was at that point we knew we were one nation. Lesilo. All right. Okay. Very good. That's some interesting stuff to wrap up this first hour of the morning. We've got more coming at you in the next more M-O-A-R, more coming right up next.
CliffCentral.com.